Hello, and welcome to the Thinking Elixir podcast, where we cover the news of the community and learn from each other. My name is Mark Erickson.
And I'm David Bernheisel.
Let's jump into the news. First up, the official Elixir 1.18.0 release landed. So we had announced it about two episodes back, just saying that, hey, it was imminent. Well, it actually did officially land that week, which we are super all happy for. And I just wanted to put that back on people's radar in case you hadn't had a chance to play with it, given the holidays and all the things going on. So I just gave it an upgrade just today before we recorded. And so I upgraded my Erlang and my Elixir version and my project. I did a clean build, you know, and it reported pages of new compiler warnings. So this is all credited to the new typing system with additional detection of type violations. And when I say pages, that may be a bit of a stretch, right? It's because each one of these warnings is very nicely formatted with multi-lines. It's like, hey, we were given this type, but we expected some one of these types. So It takes up a lot more visual space, but it's very readable, very approachable. And honestly, I just thought like, wow, this is really cool. Like these are totally valid that I had just bad types, but the app was working fine. But under some circumstance, I may have just discovered and prevented a runtime problem.
That's pretty nice. I'm kind of imagining like mixed compile piped out to your printer and just like your printer starts like literal pages here. Though I think Xdoc does can create an EPUB for everybody.
Yeah, true.
Right? I don't know who uses that, but you could print out all your hex docs in EPUB format on a printer and take them on your vacation for nice easy reading.
Put them on your Kindle. Yeah, just sit there on an airplane swiping through. Oh, this is my favorite. I'm gonna like bookmark this one.
Yeah, I'm not trying to gloat or anything, but I have yet to run into any type issues on my projects. But oh boy, when I do upgrade Elixir versions and like I haven't updated my dependencies. Like there was, I don't know what it was, but I was using some old versions of Phoenix Live View. Oh, just warnings everywhere. No. and if I have to upgrade Live View, that probably means I have to update, like I'm talking about old projects here. So I probably have to update some other stuff too. Like all the form helpers and like it just turns into an issue.
Yeah. And I do just want to call out though that these are generated as warnings. So it's not a compilation hard stop. Hey, you can't go further until you fix this. So it allows me to, you know, continue to run my application and continue finishing that feature I was in the middle of, and then, you know, still being able to come back and start cleaning up and whittling down those issues.
Mm-hmm. Unless you're like me and CI fails on all warnings.
Yes. Yeah, so it might be a local branch where you're experimenting with, like if you're using something like ASDF where you can easily change versions, then you could do some of that locally.
Quick aside, the core team, I know Wojtek Mock is working on this, but there is an easy install script now where you can pipe pre-compiled Elixirs and Erlangs, you know, into your terminal and just adjust your path to, you know, look there first. I tried it out for testing out something on Elixir main, and it worked beautifully. It was pretty great. Nice. So speaking of Elixir main, that would be Elixir 1.19 right now, which is not released, but that would be the version. It recently gained some new type checking capabilities as well, right? This is a gradual process of getting more type checking capabilities. And this time, the new capability is about protocols. So for example, if you're writing some pattern matching inside of the protocol implementation, that is not possible, the compiler will now warn. So for example, it's a little hard to audibly tell you, but I do have some screenshots. So you find the show notes and click on the Blue Sky tweet, you'll find something a little bit more visual. But for now, if you implement like in the code, like def implement, you know, my thing for map, right? You got a list of types here that you can implement for, and then your function inside of that is capturing something that's not ever going to make it there. For example, nil. So if I do for map, I can only get maps there, but I'm pattern matching on nil. That should never happen. you'll get a warning. Same thing, similarly, if you're trying to implement for some module, like for colon and then some module that doesn't actually exist in your project, you will also get a compiler warning since, well, module's not there yet. And the warning will actually provide some helpful alternatives too. Alternatives is the wrong word. It could be that it can't find it because it might be an optional dependency in your code base.
Mm. Right.
So in your library, probably, right, if it's optional. But if you can wrap that whole implementation in a, you know, code ensure and ensure compile check. So that way it will go look for that module. And if it does exist, it will compile it. And then your implementation will work out just fine, which is pretty nice. You know, we're talking about the DevX, the dev experience of Elixir, and type checking is helping with that as well. But the error messages are always been very helpful. Anyway, so that's in Elixir 1.19. Looking forward to it. Since that post on Blue Sky, actually, they've added more capabilities to Elixir Main. It's going to be tough to keep up with Elixir Main. they're always working on stuff.
Yeah.
More exciting type checking capabilities coming soon. So I'm pretty happy about that.
And by the time this episode is published, it will officially be 2025. So as we're recording this on New Year's Eve, morning of. So so yes, welcome to 2025. But with that, it's going to come a lot of retrospectives, a lot of what has happened over 2024. And we saw a little retrospective about Elixir from Jose that was shared on Blue Sky. And he just gives a little perspective. He says, we saw tons of progress on Elixir's type system in 2024. We started the year with a best paper award, then Elixir 1.17 in May with data type warnings, and now Elixir 1.18 with type checking plus inference on function calls. And he's announced that he'd already started work on 1.19, and he will share more as it progresses. That's just really cool. You kind of put it all together. It's like, wow, yeah, that was a lot that happened with just Elixir in 2024.
Yeah, and it's always kind of cool to have, like, to look back at your, was it 2024 Wrapped kind of things? All the apps are doing it, right? Spotify, YouTube, weird apps too. Like, there's other apps that are giving you, like, what? Why are you giving me? Like, anyway. And it is easy to forget how much we could accomplish or experience in a whole year, right? 2024 was kind of a meh year for me, but there was a lot that happened. For example, I got to host ElixirConf, which is pretty nice. And on the stage there was Brian Cartarella talking about LiveView Native, which is this. I'm transitioning here to the next news item here, which is about LiveView Native. And his title of his talk was that LiveView Native is ready. That was the post, right? That was the talk. And so that talk is actually now released on YouTube, by the way. But LiveView Native version 0.4, RC0 was released. 0.4 is expected to release soon. So what's the big change with 0.4, which this release includes a change to LVN's, and LVN is LiveView Native, LVN's core networking stack away from Swift, which is interesting. It's a big shift. Bugs are, of course, expected. We're still pre-1.0, but they plan to move quickly on the patch releases, but request, you know, help on surfacing and reporting those bugs. Now, you're probably wondering, why? Why would you do such a thing? they explain that they need more control over the network stack and are consolidating into a single library, meaning that they can share all those updates across all the clients. Remember, LiveView Native might be starting with a bunch of Swift-oriented stuff, a lot of Apple, aka Apple-oriented stuff, but they're targeting all of the different platforms out there. That means Jetpack for Android, yeah, and then whatever the Windows one is. So they've got all the platforms to worry about, right? So they can't necessarily just
rely on Swift's network stack. Yeah.
So yeah, kind of makes a lot of sense. Why not? Yeah. But all that is just like, that's a lot of work. So you got to hand it to them for taking on that challenge. And if you're a listener and you heard me a couple of episodes ago, we were kind of wondering aloud when LiveView Native might hit 1.0. It was a conversation because I think I confused it with LiveView, regular LiveView that just hit 1.0. So I was kind of curious how long Native might hit 1.0. So Brian shared some of his insight, and he said it's going to take a while, paraphrasing Brian here. It's going to take a while. We're not going to rush it. There's no specific KPIs or anything else that need to achieve other than just having demonstrable, you know, examples in production and that it does what they promise it would do. So I don't know, when you're taking into consideration that they have to rip out networking stacks and I target all of the different, you know, stacks of like Windows and OSs and stuff, like no one's expecting 1.0 anytime soon. But I am very excited that LiveView Native is quickly progressing, it sounds like, and becoming easier to develop for. So anyway, good job, LiveView Native team. And looking forward to the big progress of 2025.
And next up, XDoc version 0.36 is out and uses SwupJS, that's S-W-U-P-J-S, for navigation when it's hosted. To automatically get these updates for your hex packages, just remember to mixdepths update XDoc for your package, and then remember to republish the docs, because you can republish the docs without having to make any code changes or releases with the package. When I was looking at this, I was like, okay, what the heck is SwupJS? The GitHub project describes it as versatile and extensible page transition library for server-rendered websites. Well, that sounds like perfect for LiveView, you know, because that's what we are, is like server-rendered. But what that is it's all about doing JavaScript on the client that's doing page transitions. So I have some links to it where they have like the swupjs.org website where they have a whole bunch of documentation, how this works, and demos. The demos are great because it gives you really a good idea about what it can do. And, you know, I just look at this and I think, wow, that sounds really great for LiveView. I would love to try this out. I haven't tried it out myself yet. I am interested in seeing how well this integrates with LiveView. They have a whole bunch of already built-in setup for like AlpineJS and some of these other frameworks, but I didn't see anything specifically for Phoenix LiveView. But the way it works is it hooks in so that when you do a click, it hijacks that, preloads the content, and then does a smooth transition in the browser. So it's doing that kind of stuff, and you think, okay, well, I just have to make sure I'm not doing anything you know, kind of crazy with some of those clicks, like, because with the Phoenix click event that goes to a live, you could do anything. So you just got to think about what is it I'm going to be doing, you know, transitioning to a different state, moving, like displaying a modal. It shows how you can do that kind of stuff. So it looks really cool, but this is just throwing it into XDoc and giving you some of that better navigation experience within XDocs. And so that's an easy win, right? Just to be able to update your library version of XDocs and republish, and hey, your docs start looking better and interact better.
I can't wait for the moment that Phoenix pops up, you know, in all of these like JavaScript UI libraries, you know, as a plugin or whatever. It's such a like expected downer that like you go to Swup, for example, and you see the integrations. It's got AlpineJS in there, right?
Yep.
Which means that the Laravel and Livewire community is like looking for these places, and they're like contributing these or whatever it is, and they're adding it there, right? And like I 90% of the time I go look for a Phoenix one, it's never there. I have to go find like the custom one or the vanilla one and integrate it myself. I remember a while back ago trying to get like a Phoenix integration page on the Tailwind install, you know, like on the Tailwind guides. That all turned out to be moot because
Phoenix
right around the same
it.
Time. Yeah, Phoenix started generating projects with it, but it is there now, and I did contribute something at some point, so they do have that on Tailwind at least, which is pretty cool. But yes, yeah. I am very much looking forward to it. And just to recap again, Swup is all about page transitions, so
yes.
You're going from one page to another, you can animate that smoothly, makes it look like web 2.0 JavaScript spa kind of feel.
Yes, it totally looks like
idea.
A spa.
Yeah,
and really, when I was looking at this, I haven't tried it yet. I haven't seen what gotchas are there for a Phoenix app, but it just made me think, I wonder if this, or I don't know what's behind it, something like this could actually end up being added official as part of Phoenix LiveView. That would be interesting.
Yeah. So I'm going to take Dave Lucia's advice when looking around at something that just needs to be done or is missing. just go do it. don't be like me and feel bad that
don't
something doesn't exist.
Yes.
don't just complain. Just you can do it. It's okay. I tell that to my kids all the time too. It's like, why do I need to get you milk? You know how to get milk. Why do you need me to get milk? You go get milk. Cool. So what else is coming up? Speaking of XDoc and HexDocs, there is a cool new thing that's coming up. It's not here yet. Just putting that out there. It's not here yet, and maybe it never will be. So I'll put that disclaimer out there. But I did see some issues and PRs that were opened and some PRs that were merged about this, which is adding the capability to XDocs on HexDoc. Remember, HexDocs is like the service that serves all these things, right? XDoc is just giving you some packaged HTML to upload. The ability to search across all of the packages and search, functions, whatever. You just search across all the packages. That's been a complaint I've heard about HexDocs and XDoc for a while. For example, when you have like a framework like Phoenix and Phoenix LiveView, I don't remember where, they're intertwined, right? I don't remember where the documentation is exactly about JS interrupt. Is it on Phoenix or is it on Phoenix Live View? I don't know. I always get it wrong. It's like the USB problem. Like every time I try to put that USB thing in, I have it upside down. And so this PR instead of work is still in progress, and it's not right here right now at the time of recording. But what they're doing is that they're using something called TypeSense, which is an open source alternative to something like Algolia. Algolia is a service that will essentially index your page for you and provide a quick way to search and a nice UI framework for that as well. So you don't have to build it all on yourself. And yeah, so it's using TypeSense. And as far as I can understand, this requires, therefore, a service hosted by HexDocs or hex.pm, whatever, to provide that database for querying. And then XDoc would just hook into that, I guess. I could have that wrong, and who knows? And it doesn't really matter, the infrastructure of it anyway, but that's the idea. So there are issues and PRs being merged as of now to help improve the searching capabilities on Hex, which is incredible.
Yes, that would be really great. And I can also just imagine some of the complexity there, because there are lots of packages on Hex.
Yeah, I'm curious how they're dealing with versions.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. That's a good point. Versions. But then there's also, like, if I'm just doing a text search, I don't necessarily want it to return a match in a library I don't use, right? Mm. Like, so how can I indicate these are the libraries I care about? Or maybe, I launched something from a mix command, like mix HexDocs or something like that, and it says, what are all the libraries that you're using? And then I'll pre-select those, something like that. I have no idea if anything like that is even being imagined, but I could just see, like,
there probably is like a scoring system though, based on
popularity, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly. Who knows? But yes, you're right. Total like complex thing there. Yeah. And how do you mix that in with like your local environment? Like, now you've got IDE integration in here somehow, maybe. Like, what? Anyway, a big field of opportunity there. So
yes.
be like future me. And when you see that problem, don't complain, go contribute.
Yeah. And just really to kind of put some context on it, like it's not a simple, like, oh, just make that work so I can search across. It's like, oh, there's a lot of stuff that comes with that.
Yeah.
So yeah, very appreciative of the effort being put in there. And next up, parameterized test, which is a package itself, parameterized test, has version 0.6.0, which was released, and that brings better failure messages to help pinpoint when the combination of parameters fails, which combination it was. So what it does is it adds a stack trace for the failing test, which really helps expose which combo it was that caused this issue, which massively improves the debuggability for these types of tests. Yeah, and this package is created by Tyler Young. So yeah, friend of the show, love it.
Highly recommend it. Pair that with a parameterized test, which is confusing. Parameterized test of modules.
Yes.
Which is built in to Hex or XUnit.
Yeah, yes. No confusion there.
I ultimately have like a table of combinations that I don't want to brute force a bunch of tests for, you know?
Right.
Like I really kind of want something like parameterized test to be just built into XUnit. Wow. All right. Well, anyway, also in the library ecosystem, we've got Phoenix Test. Another good friend of the show, Herman Valesco, maintains this one. He released 0.5.0 and then sends in a bug fix, which brings new functions, assert has and refute has. And these help normalize between dead views and live views, and the release also updates support for live view 1.0. That doesn't sound very impressive just on its face, right? That's like, okay, great, new functions, wonderful. Here's the cool part about it. It seems today I'm talking about all the things that are not here yet. So not here yet, but what it's building towards. It's going to allow for work in flight for more drivers in Phoenix Test. What do I mean by drivers? I'm going to call it a driver. It's not really a driver, but you have like a dead view driver, and then you have a live view driver. Mm-hmm. These aren't really drivers. This is not the right word. But then you have an integration driver. Integration as in like launch me a real browser, bruh, and like actually hit it like real for real. There's been some activity around Playwright a lot lately. It seems to be the most official and stable way of like querying and dealing with browser testing. So there is a Playwright driver out there as well. So I'm just trying to imagine here, like the creme de la creme of testing here is one API for hitting a page, one set of functions for hitting a page. And then you configure it to say, this only needs to be like unit level kind of stuff, so don't open the browser. Or this one's like, ah man, I really need that CSS because that CSS might be blocking something, you know, blocking the view or something, so give me the real deal here. I'll pay the speed price and open up the real browser, and my test virtually doesn't have to change, right? Mm-hmm. I'm using the same helpers in there. A man can dream, I guess, but that's where I'm hoping that this lands, right? Which is a huge and hard problem. Talking about like TypeSense earlier with XDoc, this is that kind of like expanse of like all the complexity that's underneath that to make that just work. So props to Herman Valesco for taking on that challenge. But that is what Phoenix Test is like preparing for. And again, asterisks, we may never get there. Who knows? It may never happen for unforeseen reasons, whatever. But that's from Herman himself. So maybe there's going to be some truth to that eventually. We'll see.
And next up, David, you already hinted at Brian Cartarella's talk from ElixirConf about LiveView Native is ready. Well, that video plus 9 others, so a total of 10 new ElixirConf US 2024 videos were posted. So we've got a link to the playlist where you can see all of what's available currently. And David, I noticed that your talk, Dancing with Data, Your Guide to ETLs in the Small, was also in that list.
Oh, fun.
And I saw online Tyler Young really recommended your talk and pushing people towards it. So congrats there.
Good. That payment to Tyler paid off.
I just wanted to call out a few of the other ones that are also in that list. There's like, we're not going to go through all of them, but some of the other ones. So you mentioned Brian Cartarella's there. There's Andreas Alejos, Unlocking Live Use Potential. Chris Doze, Introducing Plox, a server-side rendered SVG graphing components for Phoenix and LiveView. Brian Green, he did the one that we kind of talked about. It was like a little thing that I couldn't let go. All right, I just thought, this is like, this is too fun. It was this retro meets modern, transforming a vintage rotary dial monophone into a cell phone with Elixir and Nerves.
Yep.
And there's others too. Back when I was going into the office every day, I would often find videos like this and watch them a little sped up on my lunch break. And just that was my one way of consuming and trying to stay up on all the cool stuff that was happening. So it's a great resource and I'm glad they're continuing to be released.
I didn't do this, but I love the image that they selected for me. I had a slide in mind about AI generated dog. That anyway, you'll just have to listen to it. But that that's a great little hook of an image. I'm glad they chose it. But also it's kind of gross at the same time.
I did see that and I was like, well, my goodness, yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. So it's definitely gonna pique some interest. All right. Well, that's fantastic. So speaking of conferences, that was ElixirConf US 2024, where those videos, you know, are being posted. That's just a couple of months, you know, earlier. Great to see some of those talks starting to land. We've got a conference coming up, and that conference is called Goatmire, and it's in Sweden. If Sweden and goats and mires are just in your wheelhouse, this is going to be something that you want to go to. You got plenty of time to plan. It is happening on September 10th through the 12th in Varberg, Sweden. Quite out there. You got about 9 months or so. There is a little bit of NervesConf, you know, happening alongside of that. There's 1 day of NervesConf EU and 2 days of Goatmire Elixir. I'm not going to get over this name, Goatmire. Goatmire Elixir. It is a single track conference. Andrea Leopardi and Sonny Kalkman are the two first speakers. There's also a couple of other speakers announced, I believe, but there are more to be announced. This comes by way of Lars Wiekman, who is involved in the conference. So, yeah, just for the name alone, there better be a goat there.
Yeah, you know how they ElixirConf has had like the eagle or like these different things that they bring in where people can interact with or get their picture taken with? Yeah, you got to have a goat.
it's got to be a goat. We'll see. In all seriousness, though, it is not out in a field with a bunch of goats. It is in a beautiful venue. You go to the website goatmire.com. the domain certainly was open. You'll see some pictures of what I suppose are the location of this thing, and it's absolutely stunning. It's going to be a beautiful beautiful thing. So very cool. If Sweden is on your list of places to go, make this that opportunity.
Yeah, it'll be in the fall. It'll be beautiful. So that's exciting. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. We hope you'll join us next time on Thinking Elixir.